Josh has asked us to read Genesis 4, verses 1 to 16. Talk is titled, The Faith of Abel. Thanks, Josh.
All right. Well, good evening, everyone. It's fantastic to be with you all here for a Bible class to consider the faith of Abel. This is a topic which I've really enjoyed studying and having a look at, and we hopefully can have some real practical lessons that we can take away from looking at Abel and learning some lessons from his life and be inspired by his faith. All right, so as far as I understand, this year you've got the theme, These All Died in Faith, and having a look at a number of different faithful people in the Bible. So I wanted to just first consider why this topic is important overall. I think it's because considering people of faith really helps to build our own faith. God could have just given us a book that was full of rules or ways that he wants us to live, but instead he's given us a whole heap of stories. And these are different examples of people that have lived faithful lives that we can really learn from. And that, I think, is the power of looking at a topic like this, because we can really relate on a personal level and we really engage with the different stories that are being told. So let's first of all turn our attention to this story here of Cain and Abel. And tonight we're going to just run through the story first of all, and then we're going to follow some references to the story of Cain and Abel through the New Testament. So at the very start of the chapter, we're just told that in verse 3, that in the course of time, Cain brought to Yahweh an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought of the first fruit, firstborn of his flock and their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So we're introduced here to a situation where we've got two brothers. We're not really given the background or the context as to why they gave these offerings. It's not specifically said that God had commanded them to give it at a particular time. All that we know is that they're both presenting an offering at this stage. What's really interesting is the detail that's included in here is probably a lot less than what I would have included if I was to write the story. But I think what the writer of Genesis does is he really picks up on the key themes that he is interested in us learning about, and they really follow on from the themes that we saw in chapter 3, of the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. This is really probably the first family story, I guess you could say. Adam and Eve, probably say don't count because they didn't have parents. But Cain and Abel, they're born as brothers. And this is a story that we're all familiar with having siblings and the interactions with our siblings. And each of us have to make our own decisions about what we're going to do, about what we believe. We, of course, learn from our parents, but at some point in our life, we have to make a personal decision about where we're going to go with that. And we really see Cain and Abel take two different paths. Cain is more focused on himself, as we'll see, and Abel is really focused on the future and the things of God. So when we come and have a look at these two offerings, we've got Cain's offering, which he provides an offering from the fruit of the ground, which makes sense. He's a worker of the ground, and he's growing food from the ground. But it's interesting when you compare it to Abel's offering. It doesn't just say that Abel provided a sheep from his flock, and the lesson isn't just that. Well, Abel provided the right thing, and Cain provided the wrong thing. It wasn't necessarily just about what they've offered. When you have a look carefully at the wording that's given, is Abel brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. So we're given an indication here that Abel didn't just give an offering. There's a bit of intent and motive behind it. There's some personal cost to Abel himself to provide some of the very best of what he has to offer here. So we're then told that God has regard for Abel and his offering, but not Cain. How this is demonstrated, we don't actually know. We're not told. We often see it portrayed that some fire comes down and consumes the offering, much like it did with Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Probably a nice picture to picture it like that. But God, we're just told that God had regard for Abel and for his offering. Now, humanly speaking, you could probably have a look at what Cain offered and say, come on, at least he's gone out of his way to make an offering to God. I mean, it's probably quite a bit of hard work that he's put in. He's provided some of the fruit that he's worked really hard for. Surely it's a bit harsh for God to reject his offering. And especially when you go to verse 23 of the previous chapter, it says, therefore, the Lord God sent him, this is Adam, out of the garden to work the ground from which he was taken. So this was divinely appointed by God that man was to, initially tend and keep the garden, but also be a worker of the ground. And so it may seem harsh at first glance to go, well, Cain was just doing what God had appointed him to do. Why can't he provide an offering like that? He's put a lot of hard work into it. Well, we're given an insight into God's thinking in verse 7. So if you do well, will you not be accepted? The implication being that Cain didn't do well. There was something that was missing from what he did. The offering that Cain brought forward, it wasn't right before God. Now, if we contrast this to Abel, which may help us understand just a little bit more, it's important here to note that in verse 4, it said that the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. Now, it's important to note the order in which that's said. It's to Abel first he had regard, and then to his offering. It's not specifically about the offering as much as it is about the character and the motives of the person who is giving that offering. I guess it's the classic faith and works argument, which we're going to be looking a little bit into in a moment, which is your faith is demonstrated by the things that you do. So I think there's really two components here to what Abel has done right. Abel has done things in the right spirit. He has gone and offered the best of what he had. But also, importantly, he has offered the right offering in the way that God intended to be a lamb from his flock. So I think this theme is something that we won't spend too much time on. There's a lot of detail that we could go into, and if you'd want to chat about it after, feel free to come up, because I really love this comparison through the Bible about spirit and truth. You can't have one without the other. You can have truth, but if it's not done in the right spirit, then it's pointless. And also the same thing, if Cain has the right spirit, well, he hasn't gone about it the right way, so there's no point in doing that. These two things are both essential. Just wanted to pull out a quote from Psalm 51, which we'll have a look at in a little bit more detail later. But we're just going to pull out this quote for now. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you do not despise. And we could see that in the spirit in which Abel gave it. It says that he gave of the best that he had, the fat of his flock and of the firstborn. It doesn't specifically say that about Cain, and I think if Cain had really given the best that he had to offer, that would have been included too. The other thing is the principle of a lamb. So we know this from the previous chapter, in the fall in Eden, that a sacrifice was required, or a death was required, in order to provide a covering for sin. And the fact that God holds these men to account and rewards Abel, has regard for his offering, and does not have regard for Cain, means that that those men understood what the principle was, or at least they should have understood. And I think it's really only from Adam and Eve that they would have, growing up, these boys would have learnt about this. That Adam and Eve would have told them about what happened in the garden with the serpent, and they would have told them about God's requirement that he'd given them all the trees to eat of, but one tree they weren't allowed to eat. And when they did the wrong thing, God didn't just kill them instantly, as they may have thought was going to happen, but instead he provided them grace, and he provided them a covering, and he has provided an offering for them. And I believe that Abel really understood that, and that was the key difference between their offering. I think Abel really could see what Cain couldn't. He could see that there had to be a future Messiah, and the saving work of Jesus was real to him, and it meant something. We know that it was real to him because he gave the very best of what he had. He wouldn't have done that unless he knew the importance of what he was doing. So Abel here has offered up the very best of what he had to offer, and this was at great personal cost to himself. I think this is an important theme to have a look at, because doing our best is something that we can all take on board, because it's very personal to every one of us. Where we all have different capabilities, we all have different areas that we have skills or talents in. What I do well, I can't do what Josh does well. We've all got different talents and things that we can bring to the table, and in that respect, we can give our best in those particular areas, or in all areas of our life. So there's a few quotes we just want to have a look at here. I'll just leave these ones on the screen. Proverbs 3 verse 9 to 10. And this is as a general principle for life in terms of giving the best of what we have to God. Honor Yahweh with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. And there's what would you say? It's not so intuitive that verse 10 would be the result of what's said in verse 9. If you're going to give of the best that you have and of your first fruits, we often want to hold back because we don't want to let things go and we want to gain more. But what God is saying is if we are willing to give to God, then he will reward those who give, whether that be now or in the kingdom. Same principle in Malachi 3 verse 10, where there's the issue in Israel was that they were withholding money from the temple. And when God had said, "You've robbed me," they said, "Well, how have we robbed you? I mean, we're giving, you know, donations or they're contributing in certain ways." But God is saying, "You haven't given your best. You haven't given the full requirement. In this case, the full tithe." He says, "Bring the full tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in the house, and thereby put me to the test, and see if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you a blessing until there is no more need." 2 Corinthians 9 verse 7, this really gets at the attitude behind it. "Each one must give as he decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." So this emphasizes the attitude of the giver, a willing and joyful heart is what God desires. Romans 12 verse 1, "I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, present your bodies as a living sacrifice." If you're talking about giving your best, to give your all, he talks about present your bodies as a living sacrifice. And when we read the rest of Romans 12, he talks about different ways that we can serve others and showing genuine love to other people. And he says that this is holy and acceptable to God and your spiritual worship. All right. So when we have a look at the next section then, as to what's Cain and Abel's response to this, or particularly we see Cain's response. And we're going to consider a little bit Cain's response before we move more on to Abel, because I think looking at the negative of what we shouldn't do really emphasizes the positive of what we should be doing. And I think it's quite interesting going through and looking at Cain's response here. So God initially actually gives him an opportunity. He says in verse 7 that if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. So he's saying to Cain that you haven't done the right thing, but you can do better. And I think this is an amazing display of the character of God. Knowing that Cain has fallen short of the mark, just the same as all of us do, but yet he's saying, well, go and do well. Don't be sad about it. He says, why is your countenance fallen? You have the opportunity now to do the right thing, so go and do it. And he said that, look, sin is going to be wanting to come after you and take hold of you, but you have to rule over it. This has to be a personal choice that you make. It's not something that God can suddenly magically do for us. He gives us the opportunity. We need to actually move forward in faith and take action. So what's Cain's response to that? Well, I can imagine that Cain sort of standing there, stewing it over, maybe kicking some rocks on the ground, going, "Whoa, I can't believe God did that. I can't believe that he just hasn't accepted. Like, I put all this hard work, and he's just letting his anger build and build." And he really dwells on that anger. He doesn't dwell on how he can improve or do better, but he dwells on that anger. And we know that Jesus says that we should not be angry with our brother, because that leads to murder, is what he tells us in the Sermon on the Mount. But instead, what Cain does is he stews on this anger and then goes out to Abel and says, let's go out in the field here, and murders him in cold blood. We're not really told how, and probably don't need to know the details, but we know that this is the first recorded human death in the Bible. So can you imagine what it would have been like for Adam and Eve? And this is something I hadn't really thought about before. They knew that the punishment of sin is death, and that they would eventually die one day. But I don't think they really imagined that one day one of their sons was going to die before then. It would have been a terrible thing for them to experience. I mean, they had already seen the death of a sacrifice that was to clothe them. But it's another thing to experience the death of your son, someone that's really close to you. And this is probably one of the first human deaths that they would have experienced after the curse. And it, not to just to lose anyone, but Abel, he was the one that was faithful, that did the right thing. This was their son that they loved. It would have been devastating. We can see at the end of this story, in verse 25, we're told that they bore a son and called his name Seth, for she said, God has appointed me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. And sometimes I try to imagine how that would have happened, that they learnt about this, much like maybe Jacob learning that he'd lost Joseph. That they would have been devastated. Like, they just couldn't believe that. What do you mean? That Cain has actually gone out and killed Abel? I think it would have been something that was tough for them. And this really highlights a theme that we start to see pop up a few different times throughout Scripture, is that where jealousy of someone else doing the right thing it means that someone is killed or persecuted. We know there's some other examples, like Joseph and his brothers. They just couldn't stand the fact that he was loved so much by his father and that he did the right thing. We've got David and Saul. Saul just couldn't stand that David was doing so well and so faithful. Daniel as well is another example. And we see this theme of there's this conflict and this tension between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman.
I think there's a really good quote in John chapter 3 where Christ presents motivation really well, saying that they love the darkness rather than the light. And so do wicked things hate the light because their works are exposed? And so Cain
Definitely. I love that quote as well because it really shows that people in the darkness, they want to hide the things that they've done. I mean, you even look at what Cain has done. He says, when God asks, you know, where's your brother? Oh, am I my brother's keeper? Tries to hide it and push it away. Like, I'm not responsible for that. They're afraid to come to the light. As soon as God, when he speaks to Cain, when he's that light that's shining on him to reveal what he's done, he's uncomfortable. So why did Cain kill his brother Abel? Well, we know it's jealousy, but let's turn up 1 John 3 and verse 12, which talks a little bit more about this. So we'll actually take it from verse 11. It says, "For this is the message that we've heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. We should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's were righteous." So in this situation, the theme through John here is about how we care and how we treat our brothers. And that's really where this contrast between the characteristics of Cain and the seed of the woman comes out. We can see that when we go through and have a look at these characteristics of Cain, and I believe the opposite would be true for Abel, we can really see some of the practical characteristics of how we should be living. So we see with Cain that he offers his own hard work, which isn't bad of itself, except that that's not the offering that God requires. We can't work our way into the kingdom because it's nothing that we've done to earn salvation. We need to recognize that actually we can't make it to the kingdom on our own. We need Jesus. We need that covering. There is no room for flesh to glory in itself. We are saved by the one true Lamb, and that's the theme of the seed of the woman who believed that and looked forward to that time when Jesus would come. Cain goes out and kills his brother. In 1 John 3 and verse 16, so only a few verses later, we read, "By this we know love, that Jesus laid down his life for us. We ought also to lay down our lives for our brothers." So only a few verses later, after recounting the story of Cain and Abel, he says that actually we need to be doing the opposite. Cain murdered his brother because he was jealous of him. Actually, we should be celebrating the things that other people do that might be better than us. And in fact, we should be laying down our lives for our brethren. That's the extent, which is a challenging thing to think about. That's the extent that I want you to love the people around you, even the people that are doing better than you are and show you up maybe for some of your shortcomings. Look at those people as an example instead, and take that opportunity to do better instead of like Cain, who threw that opportunity away that God gave him. But that's the very next thing, is Cain rejects God's offer of forgiveness. The theme of the seed of the woman is that we know that we have to acknowledge sin and ask God for forgiveness. We're actually going to, it's probably worth turning this one up in Psalm 51. If we go to Psalm 51 and verse 10. This is a famous psalm of David, when he'd gone into Bathsheba and done the wrong thing. And I think this is a great example. It's the opposite, I think you'd say, of what happened in the story of Cain and Abel. This is what Cain maybe could have done. Because David, I guess the context to this is he's taken someone else's wife and murdered that man. And this is his psalm he's writing afterwards when he realizes what he's done. He prays to God and says in verse 10, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from your presence, and don't take your Holy Spirit from me." And if we go down to verse 16, we read, "For you will not delight in sacrifice, or I would give it. You will not be pleased with a burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. Isn't that relevant to the topic that we're looking at? David realized that God requires a willing spirit. It's not about the sacrifice. But when we have a look at a few verses down, in verse 19, he says, then you, or maybe we'll read verse 18 for context, do good in Zion in your good pleasure. Build up the walls of Jerusalem. Then you will delight in right sacrifices, in burnt offerings and whole burnt offerings. Then bulls will be offered on your altar. So we can see here David's emphasizing the order in which this needs to happen. We need to have the right spirit first. He says, it's not really about the sacrifices. It's about the right spirit. But the very next verses, he talks about the sacrifices that are being offered to God. And that's an outpouring of our love and appreciation for God, that comes second after we appreciate what God has done for us. And I think David really appreciated that in this case, where he realized that he was a dead man. He deserved death because of what he did. But the contrast here couldn't be more stark. David turns back to God, whereas Cain rejects the offer of forgiveness from God. The other things that Cain shows is that he then doesn't claim responsibility for his brother. Back in 1 John 3, it says that we actually need to look out for our brethren. We actually are responsible for our brother. We are our brother's keeper. And that's the thing that the seed of the woman is focused on building up other people. Cain then leaves the presence of God. We'll come to this chapter very soon. But in Hebrews 11, we read that we need to draw near to God. If we have faith, we need to draw near to God and believe that He is, and that He's a rewarder of those that diligently seek Him. That's what Cain didn't believe. God said, if you do right, won't you then be accepted? Won't you receive a reward? Cain didn't believe that, and he took his anger out on his brother instead. He then leaves. Cain really goes out then and builds up these cities, and his descendants are known for building cities, and I think there's some of them that are involved in music and warfare and these different technological developments, and they're focused on what they can do and the cities that they can build. But really, the seed of the woman, the theme that we see from this chapter onwards is we see that the seed of the woman is focused on the future. And we see that particularly in Hebrews 11, where Noah built an ark because he saw, he believed in what God told him. Abraham believed in the future promises that were to be given. And really, what God is doing is He is making His own building. While man goes about building cities and building the Tower of Babel, God is focused on building His family. That's the building that God is making. And we can see this contrast between the two seeds from this point onwards. It becomes a lot more clear. I think on that as well, it's interesting to note that Abel's name actually means breath or vapor, something that's temporary. It's what we read in Ecclesiastes about grasping after the wind, about grasping after Abel. His name means a breath or a vapor. And Abel's life, we know, was only temporary. But God provided an excellent, more excellent sacrifice which gave hope for the future. So Abel sought after spiritual things and how he could please God. And not just how he could please God, how he could do it to the best of his ability. Cain, by contrast, means gained. He was only focused on things that he could gain for himself in the here and now. And that's what we looked at a moment before. So let's now turn to Hebrews 11, and we'll probably spend the rest of our time in this chapter. And I'm sure you've probably been here a number of times looking at this topic of faith. First of all, I just want to establish the context in which the book of Hebrews is written. What was one of the main events that was going to happen shortly after the book of Hebrews was written that was going to, that they would need to be prepared for? What was one of the major events in Israel that the writer of the Hebrews is trying to prepare them for? Destruction of Jerusalem. That was going to happen not too long after this. And one of the big problems that they were facing is they were holding to the law and the things that they could see, the here and now. They were looking at the temple that they put their trust in and the walls around Jerusalem. They didn't want to believe that the Romans could destroy their holy place and the temple. So the writer of the Hebrews here really is giving them encouragement all the way through that Jesus is better. Jesus is better than the law. And when we come to Hebrews 11, the focus is on faith, because it's not about the here and now and the things that we can see that might seem permanent. I mean, for us, that might be like our house or our job or our hobbies, the things that seem, I guess, a lot more permanent and have been around for a while and we really enjoy them. But the lesson from the story of Cain and Abel meaning vanity, is that this is transient. And instead, if we're like Abel in focus on the things of the future, they're going to be the things that are a lot more lasting. And we can see that theme run through this chapter with all the different men and women of faith, is that they looked for a better future to come. Now, before we look at exactly what it says about Abel, two things I want you just to note about this chapter is that because it's written just before AD 70, when Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, each of these examples here are actually tailored to tell them to get out of Jerusalem. We might think of this chapter as just a roll call of the faithful, listing out, here's the faithful people. In fact, it's not at all. The writer of the Hebrews handpicks these people, and the things that he mentions are not things that I would choose. For example, when he talks about Joseph, he says, Joseph gave command concerning his bones to be taken out of Egypt. Of all the faithful things you could say that Joseph did, why on earth would you mention that? Well, it's because the Jews at this time would need to get their bones out of there, get out of Jerusalem and make an exodus. He said he gave, where is it? Let's find verse 22. The end of his life, he made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave direction concerning his bones. So they needed to make an exodus out of there. I mean, Enoch, you can think he was a faithful man that walked with God. He was taken away. All of these different people, the focus is you need to get out of Jerusalem. So we'll keep that in mind when we have a look at Abel. The second thing is that a lot of the examples here are not under the law. In fact, all the specific examples that we're given are people before the law of Moses. Have you ever wondered why it stops pretty much at Moses and then says, oh, and there's all these other faithful people too. Time would fail me to tell of all these other faithful people as well. It's because the people that he's writing to were caught up with the law and their sacrifices and their tradition, and he's trying to pull their mind to a time before all of that was established and say, look at the faith of these men and women before that time. And he's wanting to really emphasize that God's plan of salvation has never changed. It's always been by faith. Okay, so with that in mind, let's take a look at the example of Abel here in verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. I find it really fascinating to see the key things that are picked up here about Abel, especially because you're writing to the Hebrews, and the very first example, you say, Abel sacrificed something better than a Cain. Why on earth would you start talking about someone who gave sacrifices when you're talking to people that were pursuing the law? I think the key word is in that verse, that he offered a more acceptable or more excellent sacrifice than Cain. And if we've been paying attention through the rest of the letter of Hebrews up to this point, this is the theme throughout Hebrews, especially in the first four chapters, that Jesus is better. So Abel offered up a more acceptable offering, a better offering than what Cain offered. The key is here, is he saying that we need to focus on the real offering, on Jesus, that Abel acknowledged and gave that offering. You can't be following Cain, who gave an offering of his own works, of the things that he did. Have a look at what it says in these verses earlier on in Hebrews. In Hebrews 1, verse 1 to 2, it's emphasized that Jesus is better than the prophets. It says, long ago and at many times in different ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. He gave his word to them. But in these last days, he's spoken to us through his son. We need to look at his example of his son. We've got the words of the prophets, but they were all pointing forward to what Jesus would do. Jesus is better than the prophets. Hebrews 1 verse 4 says that Jesus has become much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is more excellent than theirs. That Jesus is better than even the angels. He's more excellent than Moses. It says Moses was faithful in all God's house, but Jesus has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses. Jesus is the one we need to be looking to. In Hebrews 4, verse 8 to 9, it said that Joshua wasn't able to give them rest completely. If he had, then God would not have spoken of another day in the future later on. So Jesus is better than Joshua, because Jesus is going to establish a kingdom forever. Joshua helped establish the kingdom of Israel in the land, but that wasn't one that lasted forever. Jesus is also better than Aaron and the priesthood. When we come to Hebrews 4 verse 14, it says, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let's hold fast our confession. Jesus is better than the high priest. He's the great high priest, and he's still alive today. So when with that in mind, with that context to Hebrews, when you come in to Hebrews 11, have the first thing to be that Abel offered a better sacrifice than Cain, our mind should be taken back to, oh, this is talking about Jesus. Abel recognized that Jesus was the perfect offering and the way in which we need to be saved. We can't be saved by works. Abel's faithful example here is to be a follower of Jesus in our heart first. We should be a follower of Jesus in our heart before trying to please God by just our works. We need to in our heart, first of all, follow Jesus and develop that love for him. And then that will be shown in our actions. So in our actions, we need to follow God's method of salvation worship, not our own. The things that we read in our Bible, that's what God has laid out for us. And sometimes we can question, is that really true? Does God really require us to come, you know, every week to remember his son? Does God really require me to actually go to the extent of laying down my life for my brothers? I do nice things to other people, but does God really require all of that? Knowing what God really requires in this offering, like Abel did of a lamb, teaches us of the full extent of what God expects from us. And Abel recognized that. And last of all, Abel also put his best effort forward. And we need to do the same thing. The other amazing thing that is mentioned here, and I really love this one, is that it said Abel was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, although he died, he still speaks. Now, I'm not sure if you noticed, but when we read through Genesis 4, there wasn't a single word that Abel said. It's really a dialogue between Cain and God. We're not told of a single word that Abel ever mentioned in his entire life. And yet the very thing that's recorded here is that God commended his sacrifice And even though he's dead, he still speaks. And I think the important lesson there is that our actions and what we do speak a lot louder than any of the words and things that we can say. And we see that example here with Abel. There's not a single word recorded of him. And I find it also interesting, the writer to the Hebrews re-emphasizes this in chapter 12 and verse 24, where he says that you've come to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than that of the blood of Abel. So again, we see that even though Abel's died, he still speaks. But we're left with his example, but also Hebrews 12 says that points us forward to Jesus. That's what Abel did in his life, because so the sprinkled blood of Jesus speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. It's interesting also to notice in that quote that we went to in 1 John, that Abel's name is not even mentioned. In 1 John 3 verse 12, it says that Cain, we shouldn't be like him, who was the evil one and murdered his brother. It doesn't even mention his name. And so Abel is this person in Scripture who we're not given his name in John, we're not given any of his dialogue, but we're left with what he stood for. And he went about it with the right spirit and followed God in obedience. And that's the thing that God wants us to remember about Abel. And here we are talking about him today. All right. We're going to leave you with three take-home points then from the life of Abel. First one really is, do we give God our best? In all the things that we do, can we honestly say that it has been our best that we've given? Do we put effort into the things that we do? Do we go out of our way for other people when it's uncomfortable? Do we go out of our way for other people that actually don't like us? I mean, something as simple as, they didn't give me a birthday present, I'm not giving them one. You know, we can be petty like that. But realizing that actually they're the very people that we need to be going out of our way for and doing our best in everything. It's easier to do our best for people that we like. But what about for people that we don't like? And that's what the theme was in 1 John, which was talking about we also need to do the opposite of Cain, not kill our brother. We need to give up our life for our brother, the opposite extreme. And that's a really big calling. The second point is Jesus real to us? Jesus was very real to Abel because we know that Abel gave the right sacrifice, and not just gave the right sacrifice, but put his best effort in, gave of great personal cost to him. So Jesus was very real to Abel all the way back then. Is he still real to us today? Can we actually see that Jesus is living and he's active in our lives today? Is he real as well? That's the faith that needs to be developed in all of us. And the last one is, in a world of talkers, be a thinker and a doer. And this really embodies the action that we need to have as a result of faith. There's a lot of people that are saying that say things, especially nowadays. You see a lot of people say different things on social media, claim different things. It's very easy for people to comment on a situation while sitting on their couch. But in a world of talkers, let's be a thinker and a doer. That's what Abel was. We're not told of a single word he said, yet we're left with the impression of what he did. That's the thing that is going to make an impact. So we'll leave it there. Thanks for that, and hopefully we can all be encouraged this week by the example of Abel in our lives.